I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Kotayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Naoki Takahashi, who is the president of Naoki, a beautiful kaiseki-style Japanese restaurant in Chelsea, Manhattan, which opened in July. And there are many types of Japanese restaurants all over the U.S. now, but recently, especially in New York City, we are seeing multiple openings of high-end Japanese restaurants which feature kaiseki-style tasting menus like Naoki. So today we'll discuss the concept of kaiseki, why we are seeing more high-end Japanese restaurants, and Naoki's unique experience working in the food business in the U.S. for long years, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as a podcast. So if you haven't, please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write our feedback, and we really appreciate your review. So also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanneeds@theheritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. And finally, I'm pleased to let you know that Sumo Stew is back to New York on Wednesday, November 15th at Brooklyn Brewery. As you may know, Sumo Stew is a seasonal live streaming event of sumo matches straight from Japan, and you can enjoy Japanese food from outstanding restaurants as well as you watch sumo matches and have fun conversations with your friends. So the 17th Sumo Stew, it's amazing, it's been the 17th time, will be held at Brooklyn Brewery, 79 North 11th Street, Brooklyn, New York, near Bedford Avenue, and on Wednesday, November 15th. And tickets are available at sumostew.com. That's sumostew.com, sumostew.com. And for Japanese listeners, there is a 10% off discount code. That's Kanpai10. It's K-A-N-P-A-I-10. That's Kanpai10. Now let's start our conversation with Naoki Takahashi. Hello, Naoki. Welcome to Japanese.
Oh, thank you very much for having me today.
So you're welcome, and I'm looking forward to talking to you because you have so many interesting things to talk about. So first of all, what is your background?
My background is in the early 20s, I got a job at the Japanese restaurant as a part-time in the kitchen. That's my beginning of studying the business of a restaurant business.
Where were you then?
I was in Los Angeles. I was in a college student, but I was very poor, so I just tried to get the part-time job and then make some life straight. That's why I got a job at the part-time in a Japanese restaurant. After that, I got a job at the pizza delivery company in Japan. And then the company owned a Japanese restaurant and an Italian restaurant. So I was in charge of both of the restaurant as a general manager. And then start doing the real business, the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. I learned about that a lot. And also, as you know, the pizza delivery business is quite different than a regular full service restaurant. So I was in charge of the purchasing also. So I was thinking about the purchasing is the from the outside of the country, which is the outside of Japan, is most of the ingredients come from outside of the Japan. So I asked the president to, why don't we open up a company in the U.S. and then we purchase the more, we can save the cost of the purchasing. So the president liked that idea. So I was transferred to the Los Angeles and then
again,
and then start doing the import and the export business. Mm. And then a few years later, the business is getting well. So why don't we open up a Japanese restaurant in Los Angeles? So we didn't have any connection. So I approached the Mr. Matsuhisa, Nobu Matsuhisa, which is very famous in Los Angeles also that
Nobu
time.
Restaurant.
Yes. And then he was just trying to expand it there more, New York and Europe and Japan. So I was joining that company. And since I joined it, and he taught me a lot of the restaurant business. And then I was in charge of the one of the restaurants. So that experience is very helpful a lot for my restaurant business.
Mm. So which one did you run or manage?
I was in Malibu, which is, open up just right after we opened up Las Vegas Nobu. And Malibu was a quite interesting location, which there are a lot of celebrity living right there.
Mm.
So every night we having a movie star and a TV star, all those the big celebrity customers. So it was a good experience for me. And right after that, I transferred to the Japan, the Sendai, which is the headquarters was there.
Mm.
And then I changed the job to the Kuwait restaurant, which is the currently I'm working for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was manager of the about 12 restaurants in the Tokyo area, and I was in charge of that. And 5 years later, the president asked me to go to the Singapore to open up a new company. So I was transferred to the Singapore, and then I established a company, and also I opened 15 restaurants in 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and right after that, they transferred me to the New York. That's why I'm here.
Wow. How did it happen, though?
I was be honest with you that there are no candidate in our company. So that's only the reason to the president choose me. I'm going to in charge of the outside.
Well, because
company.
You already at that point you had how many years in the U.S.?
It was total is about 20 or 25 years living in the U.S. and then also Singapore. So maybe longer than living in Japan that moment. So
right.
I think that's a quite interesting life for me and for our to open up a new restaurant in the foreign country, yes.
Mm. Right. So sounds like this country never stops keep coming here and inviting. So, yeah, as I said at the beginning of the show, we started to see more formal kaiseki style Japanese restaurants in the past few years here in New York City, including Suzuki and Uchu and, of course, Naoki. So why do you think it's happening?
I think the reason is a couple of reasons. Well, the one reason is that Japanese was registered integrated cultural heritage a few years back. So that's one of the reasons.
The UNESCO.
UNESCO. That's a popular one. So people getting interested in. And then also other one, what I think is the Japanese restaurant owned by the foreigner, which is Chinese, Korean, all those people open up a restaurant as like a not real Japanese restaurant, but it seems like a Japanese restaurant.
Mm.
And then I heard about the Japanese own the Japanese restaurant is less than 10% in the United States. That's quite the shocking numbers, but yeah, that's very interesting for me.
10%?
Yes, wow. Less than 10%. And the culture of the Japanese food in the United States is they used to have the popular dishes like a tempura, sukiyaki, teriyaki, all those dishes very popular, but the people getting get tired of it, and then anywhere you go, you can see the same menu. So they are looking for the new dishes, which is more different type of the Japanese food. Mm-hmm. And then early 80s, the sushi and the sashimi came up and then getting real popular. Mm-hmm. And then I think the culture of Japanese is getting more told to the specializing the dishes, which is American people never experienced before. Mm-hmm. But the people see the internet or sometimes Instagram or Facebook or all those social media expanded rapidly, so they can see, they know what they are serving in Japan, so they want to try some kind of different dishes or Japanese style of food in the United States. So that's why I think the Kaiseki study is going to be I think it's going to be a popular, and then people trying to open up a more Kaiseki style restaurants in the United States.
Interesting. Because I think, you know, like you said before, it was only, you know, nobody ate raw fish and then sukiyaki and tempura. But then when Nobu opened in 1994 in New York City, your former
boss,
Nobu Matsuhisa. So I think that completely elevated the image of Japanese restaurant.
Yes.
It's not like a foreign food. It's more like a stylish.
Yes.
You want to be a part of it.
Yes. Yeah. And then he always taught me that the Japanese food must be a Japanese. You can make the fusion Japanese, but the that's only fusion makes the customer confusion. So make it more simple and must know what the real Japanese style is. So that means we can adjust it, make a fusion style of the recipe or dishes. Mm. That's what his philosophy all the time, yes. Mm.
That's interesting because Nobu's food is influenced by Peruvian Nikkei cuisine, which is based on traditional Japanese cuisine, and then added flavors are more Peruvian, like acidity and spices. Mm-hmm. So that really makes sense that he said that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. And so Naoki is owned by your company, the Create Restaurants Holdings in Japan. So what is Create Restaurants Holdings?
The Create Restaurant established the company in Tokyo 1999. And then our strategy is the multi-brand and multi-location strategy. That means usually the restaurant look for the certain concept, which is the hamburger or pizza or let's say like a tempura or certain items.
Like Ippudo or Otoya,
yes,
kind of.
Yes, the ramen. So they are looking for to open up a restaurant in certain location. But what we are doing in the strategy is we look for the location and then we think about what kind of concept is going to be a match with that location. That's why we do have so many brands, about 200 brands.
And, wow.
And also 857 outlet in Japan. And that's why we rapidly open up a different type of the restaurant in a short time. And that's why the company called the Create Restaurants.
Right. So why New York and Japanese restaurant, the combination?
Yes. 2011, I was in charge of the Singapore, which is we never opened up a restaurant in outside of Japan, and we tried to expand to the different world, which is the Japanese culture is going to be very popular outside of Japan. So we tried to open up our concept to East Asia, and then we decided to open up a Western concept south of Japan, but that was not really acceptable for the southern countries. And we realized that we are the Japanese company. Why don't we open up a Japanese restaurant in outside of Japan? So that's why we are focused on the Japanese food when we go to the outside of the Japan, yes.
Right. And also, I think New York City is one of the most, recognized city as Japanese restaurant capital. So,
yes.
Right. Especially lately, I think not just, I just mentioned Otoya, but Otoya to more casual ramen to anything Japanese tend to be popular. So it really makes sense that you opened a Japanese restaurant. Okay, so so you opened a restaurant in July this year, but what was the hardest thing? Because you also so much experience abroad in this country too, so what was the toughest thing that you
experienced? To open up a restaurant outside of the Japan is always tough because we have to look for the space and we have to get the lease, the space, and then we have to think about what kind of concept is going to be matched for that certain space. And then we have to create a menu and we have to purchase the ingredient and we have to look for the vendor and also we have to look for the staff to operate a restaurant. All those things are pretty much similar in Japan and other countries. But the thing is, this is my first experience, so that was very difficult. All those things are very difficult, always difficult, yes.
Right. And some regulations.
Yes. And then we have to know exactly what the area, what kind of area they are and what kind of people they are living in and what the lifestyle is. All those things we have to learn about that to open up a restaurant, yes.
How long did it take for you to?
I spent about 1 year and a half to learn about all those, the culture, which is the New York City style. So not myself, but there are so many the friends in New York City. They gave me good advice and then help us a lot. And I really appreciate all those help, yes.
So if you name one thing very unique about New York City, customers or the culture, what is it?
Customer is very spoiled. Because they right now we do have the menu, but they come to the restaurant and they always ask me, I don't like this the ingredients, so can you substitute this other things, or I cannot eat, or can you cook a little bit more, or all those things. Their request is a lot if I compare to the Japan and other countries. But Nobu told me that if the customer request, always the customer's request must follow, as long as if you can. If you cannot, finally you cannot. You can say, we cannot, but their request, we have to listen, and we try to make it happen all the time. Yes, that's how I think the food business is, so that's why I follow that. Device, yes.
They have to decide where to draw the line, what you can. Right. Okay, so what is the concept of Naoki?
Naoki concept is the hospitality of Japan with a five sense, which is always when we have a customer, even a couple hours in our restaurant, we want them to be comfortable and satisfied a moment, which is that moment is going to be a maybe the last moment, or maybe we do have a second chance or whatever, but always we serve the customer satisfied. And not only the food, but using the five sense, pretty dishes and then pretty decoration and a good service, all those things that one combine, and then that's our Japanese culture. I believe that we use the five cents all the time. That's a concept, yes.
Right. Okay. And so it's and the menu is one thing, right? There's no a la carte menu, only offer.
Yes. Right now, we offer the one tasting menus, and we do not have any a la carte menu. But customers sometimes ask the a la carte menu, but we can serve the a la carte menu from the tasting menu. Mm. That's only what we can do this moment.
Right. Okay. So what's the reason that you stick with the tasting menu?
Yes. In the beginning, we are trying to make some a la carte menu and then a tasting menu together, so the customer can more choice of the variety of the our restaurants. But the thing is, we focus on the a la carte menu, but the person who are working in the kitchen, we can give them 100% confidence. So that's why we focus on only the course menu. So make the customer 100% satisfied with the restaurant. That means we don't do any other things, only focus on the a la carte menu, the tasting menu. That's why we only have the one course menu, yes.
Right, interesting, because I think American restaurants started to be more like tasting menu only. Because of the same reason. And also, I mean, it's just the expression of chefs. I think it's becoming more, and then people started to pay more for it.
Yes, money is not object, but our the goal is the customer, we make them the customer to satisfy that moment. So that means we can do our best in only the course menu. That's in this moment we can serve on the menu, yes.
But the price is, it's you serve over 10 items, 10 course menus,
yes.
And then it's $80.
Yes, right now it's $80, and the price is going to be a little bit changed from the November, so but it's going to be $88. But the price is not that expensive, I believe, if I compare to the other Japanese restaurants.
Right, so easily over 150.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And so the tasting menu, but I'm just curious, though, that like if you go to Japanese formal Japanese restaurants, like it's either ryotei or a couple, there's like high-end restaurants, they tend to have omakase, right? So omakase means chef, I'll leave it to you,
yes.
To the chef. So is it too risky to do omakase?
Omakase is, yes, in some point is very risky because it depends on the day what we have in stuck in a refrigerator, and you know, or we can buy from the vendors. But once we make the menu, which is we are changing that every month, but the certain menu, that means we can purchase all the time, and we can make the schedule to purchasing. So that means we can always have the same food. But omakase is very interesting, and you know, people like in the New York City, but very popular. But right now we cannot do such a thing because we don't have that much experience for the omakase right now. But maybe in the future,
right.
Yes.
Okay. And so Naoki's menu is kaiseki based. And for listeners who are not familiar with kaiseki, what is it?
The kaiseki is, there is two kind of kaiseki in Japan. One is for the tea, which is the light food of the kaiseki. Always, we do have a tea ceremonies in Japan, and they serve the kaiseki menu in a tea ceremony. But not that heavy, just the light menus. That's one of the kaiseki. Also, other kaiseki is the like a full course menu.
Right. So the first kaiseki is more, well, it's a part of tea ceremony.
Yes. And
the one
is the make that when you do the tea ceremony, they do have a kaiseki, which is. The meal is very light, like a vegetarian menu, almost. 90% is a vegetarian menu. They don't serve the meat or any other things. But usually, tea, come with the tea, is very light kaiseki menu.
Right. But then the majority of people call kaiseki now more than this is like Naoki's.
Yes, kaiseki. Yes. Mostly the full course menu, which is start with the appetizer and grilled dishes, fried dishes, steamed dishes, and sashimi dishes, and soup, and the rice. All those things, the full course menu is called the kaiseki, which is based on the menu is usually for the sake. Come with sake and then the food is going to be together. So other one is the tea and the food, and then the other one is the sake and the food. That's a two different kaiseki.
Right. And it spells differently. So the first one for tea ceremony is stone in inside pocket, like to keep you warm when even if you are hungry. So it's kind of very, I think, kind of a stoic image.
Yes.
But the one, the feast is the one you serve at Naoki. Right. And also you serve a vegetarian menu too.
Yes, we serve the vegetarian menu also. Yes.
Right. It's like a shoujin.
Yes, yes.
Right. That's for another episode we can talk about.
Yes.
So how do you offer a kaiseki at Naoki? Because is it a very traditional style kaiseki?
Not really traditional, because we serve the dishes, about 8 different dishes, in I mean 8 different courses, but we serve the appetizer, which is in we call the flower basket. Mm-hmm. So we serve the small, teeny tiny dishes in the basket. That's our appetizers.
Mm, it's stunning. It's and, like a flower basket.
Yes, and that's kind of a little bit different presentation of the Japanese traditional kaiseki style. But we convert to the United States, that the many looks and presentation is very beautiful. So we start changing the flower basket appetizers. Mm. And then after that, we serve the soba buckwheat risotto, which is the little bit the Japanese style, but we put some little bit ingredient of the trif oil. So we adjust to the American people. Mm. And then next one is sashimi, and then go to the entree dinner. And then after that, sushi and the miso soup is coming up.
Mm. Mm. Right. So it's more kind of familiar items to the American diners.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And right. So the seasonality is essential. You said you change the menu monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So do you get the ingredients from locally or from Japan?
Yes. Mostly ingredients come from locally. And then some of them are from Japan. Mm. But 90% is local. The vendor we are buying from.
Mm.
And then fish is some of them in Japan, but vegetable, all the vegetables we're trying to get, local vegetable, yes.
Mm. Okay, and maybe you can tell us what kind of seasonal items you're selling
right now. We are Halloween season, so we use a lot of pumpkins. And then sometimes the ingredient from the local ingredient, which is the seasonal ingredient, which is very familiar with the New York City people. So we use those ingredients because the season is quite a little bit different than Japan and the United States. So once we decided to serve the ingredient, the seasonal ingredient from Japan, but people are not familiar with the Japanese ingredient, that means not make them, understand. So that's why we focus on the customer, which is living in a people in the United States. Their seasonal, we adjust it to the food, to the their lifestyle. So, yes.
Right. So like the summertime, it's tomato and farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things like corn, of course, it's more American, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And, by the way, I think people tend to say, four seasons, and in Japan, people have more, up to like 24 seasons for kaiseki restaurants.
Yes,
but I think it's America, it is beyond, far beyond four seasons too, right?
But we can not educate, but we just introduce the people to the season. I think we should do in the future. So they're try to feel the taste and learn about what they're having in the dishes. All those seasonal thing is very interesting, and then some of the item is very, very tasty during the season. So that's why it's seasonal. So we try to introduce all those ingredients in United States people. So, yes.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about how the Naoki restaurant expresses seasonality outside the plate. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Naoki Takahashi, who is the president of Naoki, a beautiful kaiseki-style Japanese restaurant in Chelsea, Manhattan, which opened in July this year. So we've been talking about seasonality, and another way to express seasonality in Japanese cuisine is serving vessels. So what kind of plates and bowls do you use?
The Japanese, which is the traditional dishes, and then in the beginning, we purchased in Japan, and then we ship it to the New York for entire year's dishes. Mm. So that means quite a lot. And then
what means that you change?
Yes,
for season.
Yes, for season. So we decided to. In the beginning, I was trying to buy the dishes in the New York City, but not really variety is enough for the our concept. So we decided to purchase the dishes in Japan and bring it here.
Mm.
And also, dishes are very expensive, and then some of them are Arita and very famous. The dishes, all those things are expensive, so we don't buy everything, but a few of them are expensive, yes.
Mm. Right, and I was impressed when I went to Naoki and then started dinner. The server came to show me the collection of beautiful glasses, and then which one do you like for your sake?
Ah, yes,
and I was like, very impressive. I couldn't decide quickly because so many of them, beautiful. Right, so, yeah, so that's interesting because kaiseki restaurants, if it's formal, you have a warehouse in Japan, in Kyoto, for instance. So, yeah, that's the seasonality.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a combination depending on, you know, the chef's cuisine and the chef matches the dishes?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then the people come to the restaurant. Of course, I want them to enjoy our food, but even though the plate is very beautiful and then some of them have a history, so I want them to enjoy the plate also.
Mm.
And then atmosphere is quite important for to the restaurant. So we always think about the dishes, and then the food is always together.
Mm.
And then how we serve the dishes. That's very important for us too. Mm. Yes.
Right. And then another thing is the decor. So Naoki has a really impressive decor. And could you describe how it looks like? And what does the philosophy behind it?
Yes, we call the traditional Japanese beauty, which is the simple thing is most beautiful thing what we believe. So we call the wabi sabi, which is Japanese the saying that the simple is the simple is the best. So we try to to create the dishes and then the decoration, all those things must be simple. Like when you go to the Kyoto, you can see the wabi-sabi anywhere. All those things, what we believe that that's a match for our food and concept.
Mm.
Yes.
Right. And one of the very impressive pieces is the little garden.
Oh, yes. Fortunately, when I looked for the property which is trying to lease the location, I found that location, the Chelsea area, and happened to be a small space which is outside the dining area. So why don't we decided to create a small garden, which is like a Zen garden. So I think the decoration and then the decoration is more simple, and then when we serve the food, kaiseki is much suitable for our concept. So we decided to convert to the Japanese small garden, yes.
So it's the expression of the seasonality, and there's a part of nature as a form of garden. So that's kaiseki.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So who is the chef?
Our chef is Mr. Jiro Iida, which is he used to work for the Sultan Chakao, and then we met him through my friends, and then I went to his restaurant, and then I had a food, and then I was very impressed by his the performance. So I asked him, why don't you join us to our company? And then he said, okay. So I just, you know, he started working in our corporate chef right now. Yes.
Right. Well, he's a founding chef of the Midtown's Abriyakino.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So he was there for like 8 years, 2006 to 2014. Because I know him. His previous restaurant, Sultan Chakao, I used to go there often.
Oh, okay.
Because he's very traditional-minded chef.
Yes.
And his work ethics. It's very traditional craftsman, and he knows the real essence of kaiseki.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, finding a Japanese chef is another thing in this New York City. It's very hard, isn't it?
Yes, very hard. The thing is, we are Japanese. We grew up, born in Japan and grew up in Japan, so we naturally knows the food of Japanese, and then that's called the food culture, which is naturally we know. But the once we start teaching the person who not in Japan and or not living in Japan, is quite difficult to teach them. And certain items which is we can give them a recipe, but they can follow the recipe, but somehow the taste is a little bit different. And when we adjust it, it's a little bit difficult to make some communication. So also the finding the Japanese chef is quite difficult also. So we are very lucky to find a good chef. Mr. Iida is very known about the Japanese food, so I think we are very lucky to have him, yes.
Well, at the beginning, you said less than 10% of Japanese restaurants in the States are owned by Japanese companies, Japanese people. So that means that majority, over 90% of restaurants probably don't have that mindset, what is right, what is not, for authenticity.
Yes, that's why they can copy the Japanese food, but they cannot create the menu, which is they cannot do the kaiseki or more traditional Japanese the food. So the people can copy and then serve their food is much very easy, but there is no beyond. So the customer is, I think the taste, which is or a certain teriyaki sauce or tempura or sukiyaki, is of course they like it, but the more dishes what they are looking for is they cannot provide it, the traditional dishes. So that's a different the copy of the dishes or creating the dishes. Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's I think an important point, because I think in this country there's so many ethnic cuisines, and then one of the best things about America is that, like, we had a guest, Jimmy and Nick from Shuko. And they train under Masa. And, you know, those are the kind of chefs that they really elevated or expanded the traditional definition of Japanese cuisine, which is another part of art, I think. But if not, it's just a copy is diluting the tradition of a country's cuisine.
But not all the people cannot the creation, but the very, very few people can create new dishes. But the thing is, umai tough to create dishes, mm. yes, because we do have different cultures.
Mm. Mm. Right. So I'm glad that Naoki is offering that authenticity. Yes. So. Right. And then, so what kind of customers come to Naoki to feel that authenticity?
We just opened up July, so only a few few months we doing open up a restaurant. But we having a customer like mostly the Asian customers, Chinese, Koreans, and a few Japanese, and then the living is the people living in near our restaurant, the Chelsea area. All those people coming. Stop by and then look for the space or the restaurant in this moment. We do have a reservation, but yeah, sometimes they having the friends from the outside of New York City, they brought the our restaurant also. So the people the customer is all over the United States, I believe, mm. and different races, yes.
Right. So we'll see. But by next, I often hear at the beginning, Japanese restaurants mm. have a lot of Asian customers. And then once review and all information comes out, majority becomes more, American, mm. Different ethnicity comes
yes.
from. So we'll see. So you said you have 25 years of experience in this country in the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you describe the difference between Japanese diners and American diners?
Yeah, most different is chopstick or the fork. That's a big difference. But the other thing is the Japanese people, they don't know how to dine.
Mm.
So the American people know how to dine food.
Mm.
That's a big difference. So when we serve the food, is the American people knows how to enjoy the moment of
okay.
the at their restaurants. But in Japan, people go to a restaurant to just to eat, mm. make them satisfied with the stomach. That's a big difference. So I like the restaurant business, which is the culture is the Japanese culture must take their more time to enjoy the dinner.
Mm.
Yeah, how to dine in. Yeah, all those things must need it, I believe.
Mm. Mm. So even if you go to the same kind of restaurant, like same price point mm-hmm. and the service mm-hmm. quality, Japanese people tend to just not have a conversation or mm. spend enough time
right.
to enjoy.
So when you go to the restaurant, the service staff always explain to you what kind of dishes, what ingredient, how we prepare for the dishes. But in Japan, the customer, they are not important. They just want to eat their food mm. on the table. So that's the difference. So even though the kaiseki style, usually we serve the customer one by one, but they don't explain to their customer. They just make some menu and give them a piece of paper, and mm. then customer see the next dishes, what come with, what ingredient, all those things. So that to talk to the server is more romantic, the expression is more, they can explain to you. And all those things must be but maybe the Japanese culture is a little bit different than the Americans, but mm. all those things must do, I think we should do in Japan.
Mm. So it's a more service side.
Yeah, service side.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you said earlier that, New York diners are spoiled.
Mm.
And in Japan, I think you should not expect all those flexibilities available.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You normally say no.
Yes.
Sorry, you cannot do that. Very politely, they say
yeah.
no. So that's yes. Something to improve.
Yes.
Right, for Japanese restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so what is your plan for the future?
My plan is to open up the soba restaurant. Right now, there is a schedule to open up next year, end of the year.
Mm.
The concept is going to be very interesting. And then the soba restaurant has a 260 years old.
I heard it's Sarashina.
Yes, Sarashina Hori.
Amazing.
Yes, and then owner is ninth generation, so that's quite long history of the serving the soba. So that's why I'm trying to open up New York City, and then I want the people to eat the 260 years soba, and the people living in New York City. So we try to make the same soba as what we are serving in Japan. Mm. That's the second. Second outlet is going to be open next year. Yes.
That's great. Because Hori-san, the owner of that, Hori Sarashina Hori, he's an intelligent, intelligent, like cultured person.
Yes, yes.
And he has a lot of philosophies in making soba.
Yes.
So very I can't wait.
Yes. Very interesting. Yes.
Okay. And are you planning more to open?
Yes, more to open. Maybe a couple more in New York City. And after that, we're trying to expand the other states. Mm-hmm. Maybe goes to the West Coast or the South. Mm-hmm. And then expand it more different, the brand.
Right.
Yes.
Sounds like you never leave this country.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so please keep us posted. We can come back, talk about soba other concepts. That's the whole point of it.
No problem. Yes.
Great. Okay, so thank you for joining us today, Naoki.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so listeners, if you'd like to know more about Naoki's restaurant, please visit NaokiNYC.com. That's NaokiNYC.com. It's NaokiNYC.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. And Japaneats is available 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes and the Stitcher as a podcast. And our engineer is Vitor Harsh. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.